Hello, everyone. Welcome to Android Section 2. My name is Tommy MacWilliam, and today we're going to look at intents one last time, menus, reflection, and list views. So just some announcements. You should have received your mobile local feedback either now or you'll be getting it later in the week. A reminder, we have office hours next Tuesday and Wednesday. Times and locations are posted on the course homepage. And also the end puzzle walkthrough, that video along with the slides and source codes are up. The slides and source code for this section are also posted at cs76.net/sections. So if you'd like to follow along there, you certainly can. So today, as I mentioned, we're going to be taking a look at intents and bundles to go through activities and pass data from one activity to another. Menus, both the context menu and the menu the user gets from pressing the menu button. Reflection, which we saw in lecture, we'll take a deeper look at that, as well as list views, and finally, tags, which we have not seen yet, but will be very useful for your project. So as always, my feedback page is available. I try to take those into account. So let's take a look at how to create a new activity in Eclipse. As Dan mentioned in lecture, it's really, really, really easy to forget to not add your activity to your Android manifest, which your entire app will just crash if you forget to do that. So if we open up Eclipse and we want to create a new activity, we already have a project. In this case, we're just Section 5, App 1. So I'm going to right-click the package here. The package is what you create when you create the project. Usually it's net.cs76.whatever. So if I right-click this package and click on New Class, then I'm going to get this dialog. And here I can create the new name of my activity. So I can call it just New Activity. And we're going to say it's a superclass of an activity. So if I click Finish, then here is my new activity. However, we immediately get these little red lines because we have an error, and that's because we haven't yet imported the necessary Android things. So we can't import activity. That doesn't really exist. Instead, we want to import android.app.activity. So now that's going to go away. However, we also need to implement this onCreate method. So we're going to import Android OS bundle. So now we can implement our onCreate method. Add override public void onCreate. And it's going to take a bundle that's some state. And so now that's all the boilerplate we need for creating a new Android activity. And now we can use it. Except we now need to add it to the Android manifest. So if we go down here, we have an Android manifest.xml located underneath all of this project stuff. We open that up. And here you can see that I've already created an activity. So if I want to add a third activity to this project, I'm going to create a new activity element. And I'm going to give it a name. Now this name has to match the class we just created. So we just created a class called New Activity. So I'm going to say dot new activity. We close out the activity tag. And now we've created our activity. Android knows where our activity is. And we can use it without having to worry about our application crashing. So any questions on just creating an activity in Eclipse? Yep?
Why is the dot necessary? Or is it a convention of the way you name them?
Right. So the dot is necessary just because it's a convention thing as far as Android's concerned. So it just knows what class file to associate with that activity. All right. So now we've seen so far two different ways of switching activities using different syntax for creating intents. So remember, intent is just a small data structure that just contains data about what you're trying to do. So this syntax is for switching activities within your own app. So we're going to use the intent object, and the constructor is going to take two arguments. The first is the context for the intent, so basically the current activity. The second argument is going to be where the activity is switching to, so the new activity you want to show, and you're going to give the class. So we'll take a look at what that class means as well as that little question mark when we get into reflection. So once we have this intent, here we've just created one coming from this current activity to an activity called another activity, then we can call startActivity, which is a method defined in the current activity, and it's going to put a new activity on top of the stack. So we also saw last week how to invoke other apps from our activity. So to do that, we're going to use a different constructor. Now this first argument is going to be an action. So these are constants defined in the Android API for you, like action view, action edit, basically what the user wants to do using some other app. So Android can determine the right app you want to use or let the user choose if there are multiple apps that can handle this action. The second argument is going to be data. So the way that we're going to pass data to our other app is with a URI. So the format is going to be just like a URL. It's more general. So we're going to have a scheme, then we're going to have a host, and then our data segments. So you can access those from your other activity with get scheme, get host, and get data segments. So if we wanted to invoke another app from one of our activities, we create a new intent. So we're going to use the constant action dial. So that's going to pull up the native dialer. And then we want to say, we want to have some value pre-entered into the dialer. In this case, we just want the number 123. And so we're going to use the URI tell 123. So here, tell is our scheme. It's saying what type of data this is. Now 123 is going to be the actual data that we're passing. So let's take a look at how we use these different types of intents. So we can close out our new activity. So first, let's take a look at the main activity. So here you'll notice that I've defined two buttons in my layout. So let's open up our layout. And here we have two buttons. One is going to invoke the Android native dialer, and the second is going to invoke our own little dialer that we have inside of our app. So as usual, we're just attaching an event handler to both of these buttons. So we just set the current class to be the event handler so that we can just call the onClick method defined in this class. So to do that, I had to make sure that I set implements view.onClickListener, which tells Android that this class does in fact have a method called onClick, so you can just call it. And so now we do two different things depending on what button was pressed. So the first is going to be invoking the Android native dialer. So we're creating a new intent with this action dial constant. And we don't want to send it any data. We could here, but in this case, we don't want to. So we're just going to pass it null. So nothing will be pre-filled in the dialer. Next, we're going to switch to our second activity. So here, we're switching from this activity to an activity with a class of dialer. And then finally, we're just calling start activity on the intent we created. So let's take a look at dialer. So this is a little longer. And notice I'm doing creating a dynamic GUI using Java here. So I could have just done this whole thing in XML, but just as a review of how we can create layouts in pure Java, here I've defined a root in the XML file, a root layout. That's just the first linear layout, and everything is going to be a child of that. So I'm just getting that via its ID. And now I'm dynamically creating a text view. I set it an ID, which I've defined as a constant using this final identifier. And now I'm going to use for loop to create 9 buttons. Our dialer doesn't have a 0 because I forgot the 0. So we're going to create 9 buttons, and here we're just setting all these properties dynamically. This is the equivalent of using an attribute in XML. We're just using set and then what the attribute name would have been. And now we need to make sure we add all of these buttons to the layout that represents a single row. So notice I have this set orientation horizontal. So that means everything inside of this layout is going to be horizontal. And so we do this 3 times to create 3 rows of buttons. And so now we have this onClick. So we now notice that all these button IDs are dynamic. And so the way we're going to get what button was pressed is we just set the ID of the button equal to what number that button represents on the dialer. So the number, the button 2 has an ID of 2 because when you press it, you want a 2 to show up. So we can just get this text view that's going to do display the number you're typing in, and we're going to set the text equal to the number, which is also the text of the button in addition to its ID. So if the ID is between 1 and 9, that means we must have pressed a button because the other buttons have different IDs, and then we can just set the text of the text view to that button. If it has an ID of 10, which is our call button, we're going to, again, invoke the dialer, the native dialer, except we're going to send it some data. In this case, we're going to send it the number that the user has been dialing. So notice I can't just pass it a string. I need to call uri.parse because we're not passing it a string data. We're actually passing it a Java URI object. So let's take a look at this. I finally remembered to start the simulator beforehand. So here are our two buttons. Now, if we type the Android native dialer, or we click it rather, we're just going to be brought to the regular Android dialer. You can interact with it just as you'd expect. So if we click back, you'll notice that we're back in our original activity. You'll notice that it wasn't quit, even though we went into another app, which in this case was a native dialer. Now if we click on our dialer, we're taken to our little dialer. We can click 2, 5, 6, whatever. Now when we click on call, we're taken to the native dialer where this value is pre-filled. So you can't actually initiate a call programmatically just as a permissions thing. Android doesn't want you to be allow the user to make a random call from your app. So the best way to do it is with this and just let the user confirm that this is the number they want to call just as a secure, well, I guess you can call it a security or a privacy issue. So any questions on how we're getting among those different activities? Yep. I just couldn't hear that last part. So how do you make sure that IDs don't conflict? So that's largely up to you. So you notice that I've defined these two constants here. So I'm not just typing in set ID 10, because that's a number that I would easily forget. So if I have these constants defined at the top of my activity, or I could put these in an XML file under values, then if we always use those instead of just assigning an arbitrary number, then we can try to make sure they're a little more unique. So in this case where we're setting an ID in a loop, we can employ a technique like adding 10 or adding 20, but it's up to you to try to make them to be unique. So you have no control over the generated ones from the resources. So we can take a look at what those are, and they tend to be really high numbers. So this is hexadecimal, and these are starting up in the 2,000, 220, 200,000, some order of magnitude that's very high. So we know that these are basically the ones we can't use, so we can just make sure that these never conflict. Yep? Is hitting the back button the same as hitting the finish for the activity? So that sometimes, depending on how we started the activity, and we'll take a look at how to start an activity a little differently right next. So the difference is that calling finish is going to send, you can send some data back to your calling activity. When you click back, that might not happen. So sometimes when we start an activity, we want the equivalent of something like a function return. That activity will return some value to the calling activity. So to do that, there's a callback called onActivityResult that will fire in the calling activity once the called activity has returned. So now instead of calling startActivity, we want to call startActivityForResult. And that's going to tell Android that you need to make sure that this callback is fired when my activity is done. So the arguments are a little different. First is this request code. So if you call multiple start activity for results, you want a way of associating what activity was called with the callback. So that's going to be this request code. Result code is either going to be result OK or result cancel. So this is kind of a primitive way of indicating whether an error occurred or something like that. Finally, intent. The intent argument is going to be an intent that can be passed from the called activity back to the calling activity so that you can get additional data other than just this result code. So from the called activity, we want to call setResult before we use this finish method that we saw, which is going to pop the stack and send the control back to the activity. So with this setResult, we're going to set the result code that's going to be sent back to this callback. So we're going to use result OK or result canceled again. And now we can use an intent, and that intent is what's going to be sent back. So inside of this intent, we want to be able to send some data. And so we have these things called bundles, which are basically objects that hold all the different data types Java has to available to us, so booleans, bytes, chars, whatever. For each of these types, there's also an associated array type. So if you want to send back an entire array in a bundle, or in addition to just a single value, you can just add the word array to all of these types. From a bundle, you can get the size of the bundle, which is defined as the number of keys. If you wanted to do something like iterate over all the keys in a bundle, so you go through everything, you can use the method keySet, which is going to return a string array of all the keys in that bundle. Is there a question? Sure.
Why do we have a start activity for result and an on activity result?
Sure. So start. So why do we have? Sure. So start activity for result is how we're going to start the new activity. Okay. So from our called activity, if we call start activity for result, we're going to add a new activity to our stack. We're going to switch to that activity going to be in the foreground. Now, when that activity finishes via that finish method, the onActivity result is going to be called from the activity that called it.
That's a second function you'll have in your original program.
Yes. So yeah, onActivity.
So that's like the socket that the results go into. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. So onActivity result is a callback in our original activity, and that callback will be fired by that second activity. Yep?
So does intent data imply that a third activity has to be started to get the data back from the second activity?
So this intent data is how we're passing data back and forth. So when we call set result from our second activity, we need to give it an intent. And this intent data is going to be the same as the intent data that's given to onActivity result. So in this case, we're not going to start an intent with the intent of starting a new activity, we're just going to create a new intent to hold data. So that's all intent does, is it holds data. In this case, it's not holding data that says start a new activity. It's just holding data like strings or Booleans that we want our first activity to get. So when we look at an example of this, that might become a little more clear. So the way we attach these bundles to intents is with this put extras function. So given an intent that's already been created, if we call put extras, we can associate a bundle with that intent. So now a bundle can have multiple values in it, so that's the way of getting multiple values back to your original activity with just one thing. So to get the extras associated with your intent, you can call get intent from your activity. So if you're in a second activity and you call get intent, you're going to get the intent that was passed to you by the first activity. So then if you call get extras, you can get that bundle, and you call put extras, then you can modify that bundle. In addition to putting an entire bundle, if you really wanted to, you can put data in one thing at a time. So if you call put extra, key and a value, where this value can be a string, an integer, whatever you want, then you can put in values into the intent one by one, and then you can get those back with get int extra or whatever data type you used. So let's just take a look at an example of this, and that should clear things up a little bit. So here I have two activities. The first is my main activity. Whoa. So this just has one button. It has an event handler that is using the start activity for result. So here, request code is just an integer that I've defined at the top of my class. I'm just using the number 1. So I'm calling start activity for result on this data entry activity, and we're giving it a request code of 1. So now this onActivity result is defined in the same activity, and this is what's going to get called when finish is called on the other activity. So now we're using this request code to make sure that, yes, that's actually the second activity I called that's returning. If I had multiple start activity for results doing different things, I would want to use different request codes so I could know what activity I'm coming from. So this request code is an identifier for the second activity, which should be unique. And then I'm just making sure I got a result code of OK. And now I'm going to display the data that was entered in my second activity. So here this data is the intent that was passed to this activity from the other. We call get extras. And now we can call get string. And this string was set in the other activity like this. So this just has a text box and a button that allows you to go back. So now we're using this get intent. So we're not creating a new intent. We're just using the intent that was sent to us. So now we're creating a new bundle. We're putting a new string in that bundle. It has a key of message. And its value is just whatever value the user typed into this edit text, or just a text box. So now if I call put extras with this bundle, it's going to put this on the intent. And now when we call set result, we're going to send that intent back to the original activity. So this result OK, everything went OK. This I is just our intent. And now we call finish to pop this activity off the stack. Yep?
So to get the extra stuff, you always need to know what the key is. There's no function that will just show you what all the key value pairs.
So you can get all the key value pairs in a bundle, if I can zoom out, with this somewhere. Yeah, with this key set function. And so this will return all the keys associated with the bundle as a string. And then you can iterate through that array. So let's take a look at this app in action, if I can find it. So here's our first app. I have a button that's going to call launch activity for result. I can type in some data. And now when I click done, I've sent that data back to my calling activity, and we just use a toast to display it. So any questions on how that process worked? Yep?
What would be the mechanism for error handling if you're trying to get those bundles that exist, or getting
the bundles? So error handling for bundles. There might be an exception thrown, or it could just return some null value. So basically, if you want to get the extras, you could always make sure that it didn't return null. And that means that we're guaranteed that that has been set by the activity, and we're not going to try to use some wrong data. So checking to make sure that that this hasn't been null is good practice. But in this case, we know that we definitely set this key, and so we don't have to worry about it. Yep? So the intent that was returned, does it also include any extras that were passed in? Sure, because we're using this same intent, this get intent, that ensures that we're using the intent that was sent to us. If I just created a new intent, obviously we wouldn't. But because I'm using this get intent, anything that was set by the caller is also going to be sent back to the caller. OK, so that's it for intents. I promised this time. So now let's take a look at menus. So we just saw these in lecture, but menus are going to be described as XML, just like your layouts, except they're going to be stored in res/menu. So a menu has multiple item elements, and then we can access menus just like we usually do with our auto-generated R class, or we can say r.menu and then the file name of the menu without the XML. So there are two types of menus in Android. The first we've seen, just when you click on the menu button. You get a little pop-up menu at the bottom. The second is called the context menu. That's kind of the equivalent of right-clicking on a PC, where you get some menu that pertains to the element that you clicked on. So in Android, you invoke a context menu by holding down an element. So this is common on list views. If you wanted to get additional data or modify something with the item in the list view, you would want to hold down that item, and then you can invoke a context menu. So these are the two functions that will be called when the user does one of those things. On create options menu, when the user presses that menu button. On create context menu, when the user holds down an element. We can use the same menu that we've defined in res menu for both of these, despite the appearedly different types. So before an element can have a context menu, we need to call register for context menu. And so this function is defined in our activity. It just takes a single argument, which is going to be the view that you're registering. So by calling this function on a view, we say that the user can hold down on the view and that this callback is going to be called. So it won't be called when a user just holds down on an arbitrary view, because that might not be the behavior we want. We only want certain things to have callbacks, context menus. So these are the two callbacks that are going to be fired when the user selects an item. So on options item selected is going to be when the user taps something on that home menu. On context item selected is going to be for a context menu. In both cases, if we call item.getItemID, we're going to get the ID of the item that the user has selected. Then we can work with that object to get values and such. So what's also cool is that Android handles submenus for you. So an item, which is inside of a menu element, can also have menus inside of that. And so this is kind of the equivalent of a submenu on a Windows application, or a desktop application, I should say, where if you clicked File, and then underneath it you have everything pertaining to File, where something like Edit or View has a different submenu. So let's take a look at how we can use those. So here I've defined a menu called Options Menu. So here I've just created a menu as my root element. It has an item, and inside of that item I have another submenu. So again, just items. Notice that I'm using these at Android drawable to access the built-in icons on the Android device. And I just have two more elements. So the first thing I do when I create my app is registering this button for a context menu. So my layout just has a single button defined, and we're saying that the user can hold down this button to invoke a context menu. We don't specify what context menu we're going to use, because we're just going to fire this arbitrary callback on context menu, which is going to tell us what menu we're using. So now we have the two callbacks for the creation of menus, or when the user is looking at a menu. In both cases, we're going to use a menu inflator, which we saw in lecture, which is going to take a menu defined in XML, and it's going to kind of make it into Java objects and display it to the user. So once we call inflate, we specify what menu we want to display. So here, we're just going to say r.menu.optionsmenu, because my file is called optionsmenu.xml, and we're passing it the menu that the user wants to create. Same thing with context menu. We're just going to get the inflator. In this case, we can give our menu a title, just because of the ways the context menus are displayed on Android, which we'll see. And we're using that same exact menu to display to the user. So in both cases, we're just going to display the item's title that the user selected using a toast. So let's take a look at what happens with these submenus. So if I click the menu button, I get a menu just like I normally would. But remember, this item 1 has a submenu. So if I click on that, Android is automatically going to pull up this submenu for me. I didn't have to add any extra code for this little thing to pop up. So if I had submenus within this, then this would fade away and there'd be another one that came up. And now I can select an option. And you notice that this toast fired for both option 1 and option 4. And that's because the onMenu item selector is going to fire whenever I select a menu item. So the context menu looks like this. So if I tap and hold on that button, we get a context menu, where this text in the black background here is the text that I set with the setHeaderTitle method. So here we have three options again. If I click on the first one, there's that same submenu, and there's the callback firing for everything I click. So questions on the different types of menus or submenus? Cool. So pretty straightforward, but it is a feature that you should be implementing on NPuzzle. So now let's talk about reflection. So reflection is this really cool computer science term in which objects can inspect their own properties. So basically, you have source code that's looking at its source code. So by doing this, we can do things like invoking method or functions with strings. Instead of calling them directly, we can pass a string that will call the method that matches the string. And we could also iterate through class properties. So if I have a bunch of integers defined in a class and I wanted to go through those, I could do that using reflection. So all of these things are going to be defined in java.lang.reflect. So if you're using anything like fields, you want to make sure that you're importing java.lang.reflect.field at the top of your file to avoid any errors. So we've been using this dot class thing a lot. Now what we're actually doing here is we're returning a type class that's associated with the class itself. So if I want to get the class from an instance of a class, so in this case we just have an integer x, it's the integer class, we can say class c equals x.getClass, and now we have an instance of the integer class. If we don't have an instance, but we have the class itself, so the class name, we can use this dot class instead of dot get class. So this is what we've been seeing because we're specifying the name of the class, so the name of the activity, not an instance of the activity. We can also get a class from a string with class.forName. And in this case, if we had an activity called hello within the net.cs76 package, we would now get that. And from a class, you can also get its superclass with the getSuperClass method. So that's not as useful as trying to get the fields of a class. So the fields are all the variables that are defined within your class. So this getFields is going to return an array of field objects. So from that, we can iterate over it using just like any other for loop. We're iterating through an array. If we just wanted to get a single field and we knew what its name was, so inside of an activity we had something like some button, and we wanted to get that, we could just get the field with the name of the button. If we want to get the value of that button, then we can call get, and then we're giving it an instance. So we can't just get the value of a button class. We need to get the value of an actual button itself. So if we could, shortcuts are get int, if we know that we're going to get an integer, or get boolean, or for all these other types. If you want to set the value of an instance, we can just say f.set. We pass it the variable we want to change the value of, and then we can give it some value. So that's all really like confusing. So the relevance is simply with this R class. So this is auto-generated for us, which means we don't really control what's inside of it, because any changes we make will just be deleted by Eclipse as soon as we control save. So we could use reflection to iterate through this class. So let's actually open up this R class again. And you'll see that inside of it, we have classes within classes. So we have an ID class within this class R. So let's say that I want to iterate through this ID class. So this is not an instance. This is the class itself. So the syntax we're going to use is r.id.class. So if ID were actually an instance, we wouldn't say .class. But because ID is the class itself, we're going to say .class instead of getClass. And now we can call getFields because we now have a class object. And from a class object, we can get all the fields associated with the class. So now this is just an array, so we could iterate over it just like any other array. So the array has a length property. Now we can get the name of the ith field, which is going to be a string. And in this case, they're all integers, so I can just say int value is going to be get. So we don't want any instance because it's just a static property, so there's no instance associated with it. So we can just give null for this instance argument. Now we could have also said int value equals fields.getInt, or if we just want to use the generic get, we can cast it to an integer when we're assigning it to a value. So what this is going to do is it's going to display all of the values in this r.id class. So we have a simple text view that we're just going to accumulate a string representation of both the ID of our field and the actual field itself. So that's going to be the equivalent of our textual ID that we set in XML. So here, we're just making sure that we're catching this illegal access exception. And this log.e, we saw the log function a little earlier, and that's just going to log something out to the debug console. So we're going to say in the app section 5, app 4, there was an illegal argument exception. So this is a marginal improvement over a comment that says, uh-oh. Sure. Sure. So this get is going to get the value associated with the variable. So if you have a class and you have an instance of that class, you want to get the values associated with the instance because you can have multiple instances of a class. So because we don't have any instances of the R class, we just need to tell that we're accessing a static field, which doesn't require an instance, and so we're just going to give it null. Yep? So, if you don't know the type, this is actually just going to return a generic object. So object is a type in Java that represents any object. Integer is just a subclass of object, of which pretty much everything is a subclass of object. So that's why we're actually casting it to an integer when we assign it to int value. If we got rid of this, then we could say object value equals field.get, and that wouldn't require us to know the type.
Is there a way to find out what the type is?
So is there a way of finding out the type? And it is actually exactly get type, which is another reflection thing we can use to get the type of something. So let's take a look at what this app does. Whoa. So here I had fun with the drag and drop GUI editor again. We have the return of my favorite thing, the rating bar. And so up here, we have a text view where we're outputting the IDs of all these objects. So notice that these IDs are all really high because the 0x7f is hexadecimal. Which is, that's bottom line, is that's going to be a pretty big number. And you notice that all of these are unique. They've been auto-generated for us. And here that you'll notice that these textual representations, or the get name of the field, is going to coincide with what I've defined here. So you notice that this ID, these IDs here, are going to match the name of the field. So any questions on iterating using reflection, or what to do after you're iterating? OK. Oh, sure.
I've come across various comments that reflection is very memory intensive. I mean, when you're going iterating through five little things, I don't think that it's going to be a big overhead. But
So is reflection memory intensive? It certainly can be, but unfortunately, there's really no better way to iterate through something like the R class. I mean, usually you're going to know exactly what is inside of the R class, but in certain cases, like in the case of NPuzzle, you don't know exactly what's in there, and so this is kind of the most straightforward way of handling that. Okay. So even if it does, there's no better way, or if there is, it's far too confusing for this class. So now let's take a look at list views. So a list view is going to be a vertical, scrollable list of items. So a list view is a special type of activity. Instead of just extending a generic activity, we're now going to extend a list activity. So each item in our list view, which must contain a text view, is going to be inside of res/layouts, and then we can define our layout name just like we would any other layout, and we can access it the same way as well. So we're going to use something called an adapter to bridge the view and the model. So the model being the representation of the data, or what the list contains, and the view being the actual GUI of your application, or what the user sees, can scroll, and interact with. So an array adapter is just one such adapter, and that we're going to be taking a look at today. So basically, it uses for a model a list. So frequently, you'll see an array list. So when you construct a new array adapter, you want to give it a context, which, as usual, we could just say this. Then we want to give it a resource to be used to display each of the items. So in this case, it would be one of the layouts that we just defined. So a list view is going to use this list adapter via this setListAdapter method. So what that's going to do is it's going to set the adapter to be active for our current view, and then it's going to display our list view. So every list activity is going to have a list view. So if we just extend list activity, then we have this method called getListView, which is the list view that's basically going to take up the entire activity. You can also define a list view in our layout. If we don't want the list view to take up the whole screen, we have a list view element inside of our layout that we would use instead of getListView. So when we attach event handlers to a list view, we're not going to attach separate event handlers to every item. We're just going to attach a single event handler to the entire list view, and then we can figure out what item the user pressed from there. So another cool thing we haven't mentioned yet is this strings.xml file. Not only can it contain single strings, it can contain entire arrays of strings. So the element string-array defines a string array where each item of the array is an item child. So we're loading the string array with something we haven't seen yet, but it's in these auto-generated class under the array property. So we're going to say r.array, and then we're going to access the array name, where name is something we set in the XML. So we have that special name attribute, just like we had in our regular strings. That name attribute is going to apply to the array, not the items within the array. So let's take a look at how to use a list view. So here, you'll notice that I'm now extending a list activity. No longer am I just extending a regular old activity. And now I've also imported Android app list activity. I can't just import activity because I'm extending something else. And you'll notice that I'm also importing all these other things that I'm going to be using in the class. So instead of the generic view.onClickListener, we're now implementing AdapterView.onItemClickListener. So this is another special callback that's going to be fired within our class that's going to handle an item being pressed. So it's just a different name than maybe what we're used to seeing. So first, we're going to load an array of strings that we've defined in our strings.xml. So our strings.xml looks like, this. So here we just have a string array. We've given it a name, and it has all of these items. This is generally considered better practice than hard coding these items into our Java code, just like inserting items in strings.xml is considered better practice than hard coding strings. So from this array of strings, which we access with getStringArray, with this r.array.teams, where you'll notice teams was the name of my string array, we can create a new array adapter. So the first argument is going to be the context, which, as usual, is just this. The second argument is going to be the layout object that we're going to use to display each of the items. So my list item looks like this. Just a simple text view. I've added a few options for text size and padding so that the text isn't really small and hard to read. And now when I call setListAdapter on this array adapter, that means the list view inside of this list activity, which was created for us, is going to use that adapter to get its data. So we can access that list view with getListView, and that's going to return a list view object. And from that is where we're going to call our setOnItemClickListener, which is defined here, onItemClick. So you'll notice this really weird syntax for defining the first parameter of this method. So you'll notice that this array adapter has what's called a generic. So an array adapter can hold any type. So it can hold Booleans, integers. However, it has to hold all of the same type. So once you pick a type, you stick with it. So we're saying that this array adapter is going to hold strings. However, the adapter view does the same thing, but our callback function can respond to this adapter view regardless of what its generic is. So we just use this question mark to say, I don't care what your generic is. You can be a string for all I care, but I'm going to respond to it. I'm never going to use it. So the second argument is the view, so the item that was pressed, as well as the position of the item inside of the list view and the ID. Yep?
What do you mean by just saying I'm never going to use it?
So this could be a type, like an object or something.
Right.
Inside of this method, I'm not going to use that type. So what did I mean by what is this question mark? I'm not going to use it.
Right.
So you'll notice that in this function, I'm not using it.
You could refer to the parent if you wanted to.
Right. I can still refer to the parent, and I can still...
You can get its type if you wanted.
Yes. We can also... there's also a syntax for naming types. You can say something like that, I believe. Or maybe not. You can say some type... And you can give it some name, and then you can refer to that name later. The syntax is so obscure that it escapes me. But we can look that up immediately afterwards. But most cases, you're not going to need the type. You just need to know that it was some adapter that you've given it. So here, we're just casting this view to be a text view, because we know that each of our items is actually just a text view, because we defined each of those items. And so we can just call getText like we would on any other text view. So let's fire this up. So here's our list view. You notice that all of this was constructed for us. All we did was create a model, and we told our app to use that model to display the data. So we can scroll around. If we click on one, you get a little toast with the text of the item that was clicked. So any questions on list views? Yep. So how do we create a customized display of rendering the data is actually exactly what I was going to do next. So to do that, we want to basically extend this ArrayAdapter class. So I've noticed that an ArrayAdapter just has a text view. If it has more than a text view, we're going to crash. So we can create our own adapters if we want to create a custom view for some data. So we can extend something like BaseAdapter or CurseAdapter. And you can read up on what those do. But basically, you're going to need to define methods that define the size of your model, how to get an individual item in your model, the ID, and to get the view associated with that item. So this get view is what we're going to be taking a look at specifically, because that's how we're going to modify what is actually rendered on the device. So if we don't actually want to take care of all those methods ourselves and maintaining a list and typing all that out, we can just extend the array adapter. So if we extend array adapter, that's going to say that all these functions are already defined for us, and we can just redefine any of the ones that we want. So in this case, we're just going to override the get view. And so that's going to return the view that is rendered in each of the items in the list. So as usual, this at override syntax is required, because get view is already defined by an array adapter, and we're just going to replace its definition with our own. So let's take a look at how to do that. So here I've created a new class called custom adapter. So you notice that I'm extending an array adapter. So you notice this isn't an activity, so I don't import or extend any activities anywhere. We're extending an array adapter. So with our constructor, we're going to let the array adapter handle things like getting which item was clicked and getting the number of items in the list. So we're going to call this super, which says that I want to invoke the constructor that would have been invoked. So if this just were an array adapter, we'd say new array adapter. But instead, we're saying a new custom adapter. But we still need to invoke that array adapter constructor. So if we say super, that's what's going to invoke it for us. So now we're just saving names and descriptions. So you'll remember that the array adapter just took a single argument, and that was going to be the text of the items. In this case, we want to have multiple things in each of our items. So we're taking two arguments, where the first array list and both of the array lists are going to be the text of the items you want to display. So each of these list items is going to have two text views. So if we open res layout list item, you'll notice that no longer are we just constrained to a single text view. Instead, we can define a linear layout with two text views that are going to be displayed on top of each other. So now this is the function that we're overriding, or the function that ArrayAdapter has already so nicely defined for us, but we'd like to define it ourselves. So first, as we saw in lecture, we're calling this inflator. That's going to take this list item and inflate it into a view that we can use. So here, we're just calling it on the list item. And so now, with that view, we can access these two text views inside of it. So you may have noticed that these IDs are not technically unique anymore, right? So if we have multiple items, all of those items technically have the same ID. However, this find view by ID doesn't search your entire Android app. It's just going to search the children of what you're calling it on. So if we call find view by ID on the view that was passed to us, which in this case represents that layout or everything, we can find both of these IDs without having to worry about any conflicts, because these IDs are constrained to the single item that we just clicked. So now we have these two text views that define how our data is going to be displayed, and so we set the text accordingly. So if we click on the second argument, this int position is going to be 2, and we can just get the second element from our array list, which we set up in our constructor. So now when we return v, that's going to return the view that's going to be displayed to the user. So when we run this, you'll notice that each of my list items is now a little bit more complicated than just a string in that it has two text views, and I can interact with these just like I normally would. So that same callback was fired even for our custom adapter, because all of that was taken care of us because we extended the array adapter. So any questions on this custom list view? Yep?
Could you have left custom adapter as a class that I don't know what word it is, but that takes a class as an argument, so it wasn't restricted to string?
So can you have this take more than strings? Yes. So in this case, I'm just restricting it to strings, just because that was simpler. But if we just give this a generic object, then that means that we can pass it integers, strings, whatever it is you want to pass it. So we would just change this object, and then we want to also change these.
Would it work if you, array adapter is defined, take out the word string?
So the array adapter has to have a generic. So you notice we get this warning saying it's a raw type and we need to have a generic. So an array adapter cannot exist unless we specify what types are contained within it. So we can just have an array adapter of objects.
So you can't extend base array adapter without specifying a type.
So the base array adapter is just going to take an object as a type. So really anything we're going to pass it is going to be a subclass of object. So in this case, the array adapter, it's generally just used with strings. But using custom adapters, we can really represent whatever data we want. Usually, as we get more complicated, we probably want to extend just the base adapter, which means that we need to define all those other methods that we saw, like getItem and getView, ourselves, where the array adapter provides this for us, just because we're not doing anything really fancy. So finally, just one quick note on tags. So tags are a way of associating extra data with your view. So if you have a button and you wanted to associate some data with that button that wasn't necessarily the ID or the text displayed on that button, you could give that button a tag. So this tag can be any object. So if you wanted to use something like a hash map, which is Java's implementation of a hash table, or what's also called a dictionary, that'll allow us to set multiple things inside of our tag. And we could also give it an array list if we wanted. So we set a tag with this set tag method. So if we give this a key, then we can set multiple tags on an object. If we omit the key, then we're just going to set a single tag. But a single tag can actually contain multiple tags if you use something like a hash map, which is what we'll be taking a look at. So once you set a tag, you can get the tag of a view with this get tag. And again, this key is optional if you only want to set one tag associated with your view. So what's cool about these tags is that we can now call findView with tag instead of just findView by ID. Just a warning that this is going to be pretty slow, so you don't want to call this a whole lot or within a loop or anything like that. But basically what this is going to do is it's going to call the objects equals method, and it's going to search all the children of whatever you're passing for it until it finds a single view. So this can't be used to return multiple views. It's just going to return a single view. So just a quick example of what tags are going to look like. Whoa. So here we are now importing this Java util hash map. And so this is just a hash table. So a hash table is just a set of key value pairs, and Java handles the implementation for us. So here we're getting the text view defined in our layout. So our layout just has a single linear layout, and inside of that is a text view. So now we're creating a new hash map that we're going to be using as the tag for that object. So now we're defining two key value pairs. The first argument here is going to be the name of the key. The second is going to be its value. You notice that we are mapping strings to integers, and that's required by our generic. So if this were a string comma string, the second argument would need to be a string, or you're going to get yelled at. So after we've created our hash map, we associate that map, which is going to be our tag, with the text view. So we call tv.setTag, where tv is the text view that we just got from our layout. So now to get that tag back, we can call getTag. So here we know that it's going to be a hash map mapping strings to integers. We get this little yellow warning because maybe it's not, but we know that it is because we put it right there. And so from that, we can get the values associated with these keys. So if I wanted to get the value associated with the key Tommy, I would call tag.get, and then I'd give it the key that I want to get. So that's something that's defined by the hash map for us. And so we can just run this app, which is pretty simple. Oh, and also, we're using this find view with tag. So this would be a little more interesting if there are multiple views. But basically, we have this map, and we want to find the view that is associated with the map. So if we call find view with tag on that map, this is going to return us the text view with that tag, and then we can work with that text view just like any other view. So in this case, we're displaying a second toast with the actual text. So we run this. And I need to do that. So you run this, and you notice first we have a toast of the value, and then second we are toasting the actual text contained within the text view. So any questions with tags? So if there are no questions on tags, that's it for today. Oh, yeah. Where are we? Casting a text. So this line here?
Yeah.
So we're not actually casting a text view to a hash map. We are casting the tag to a hash map. So this get tag is going to return the tag object. So in this case, we've set the tag object to be a hash map. And so in order to say get and put or whatever, we need to cast it to a hash map.
So
that's why the parentheses are like that. So that's it for today. Good luck finishing up your end puzzle. There are office hours available, so do take advantage of those if you run into any trouble.